You're listening to The Sean Prue Show
with Sean Prue
on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hey everyone, Sean Prue with you. A good day here on Canada Talks Channel 167, and it's about to get better because it's the debut show of The Sean Prue Show, and we've got some great conversation coming your way. We're taking you to Hollywood, Sochi, Vancouver, and we're going to get your 2014 Pride started a little early. And with that, every gay man I know has just taken off to the gym to get prepped for Pride. Speaking of Pride, speaking of Sochi, have you been watching the Winter Games? As a gay man, I haven't, and I'm not really a sports fan, except for the more dramatic competitions like gymnastics, downhill skiing, diving, speed skating. Why anyone would want to watch grown men sweep ice is beyond me. But obviously, as a gay man, Russia's stance regarding my brothers and sisters in that part of the world is also beyond me. And so we're going to welcome to the show the executive director of Pride Toronto a little later on. Over there, they're not just prepping for this summer's World Pride Festival, but they're taking the time to speak out in a really interesting way on social media, something that you can participate in too if you want to show your support of gay people in Russia. Also on the show today, I get to ask a question I have always wanted to ask any real housewife. Bring me any of them, grab them by the hair, any city, doesn't matter, since the Addictive franchise started several years ago. I don't mind sharing that there's nothing I like more, whether it was Dynasty way back in the day, The Young and the Restless is still 30 years going strong, I've been watching that show, or The Real Housewives. There's something about beautiful women behaving badly that I just love. And the trick is, The Real Housewives, unlike Dynasty, unlike YNR, are not actors playing from an overwrought script. Of course, they're actually putting their beautiful mess out there for all of us to consume, judge, criticize. So I can't wait to ask Robin Reichman, famed for landing one of the largest divorce settlements in history and a Real Housewife of Vancouver, my one burning question: why? Why would anyone do this to themselves? We're also going to hit Hollywood. Have you ever wished you were famous? Henry Bushkin tasted the highest heights of fame as the sounding board, drinking buddy, tennis partner, fixer, confidant of one of the biggest icons in Hollywood history. He's on the way to the show to tell us the high price of fame and all about his top 10 New York Times bestselling book about one of the biggest TV stars ever. First up, though, let me ask you this. What would you do if you felt you were born in the wrong body? At 14, my first guest, born a boy, decided to transition and years later sued Donald Trump when she was disqualified from the Miss Universe pageant. Now she's got her own reality show on E! And I wonder what living a life like that is like. All this and free pony rides on the way. The Sean Prue Show is with you for the next hour. Sirius XM Canada Talks, Channel 167. I'll be right back with a brand new girl on my brand new show.
Back to the Sean Prue Show on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Here's Sean Prue.
You've got the Sean Prue Show with you on this fine day here on Channel 167, Canada Talks, and with me now is a true groundbreaker. I have to tell you, in my world of gay male friends here in Canada and Toronto, where I live, a lot of us agree that gay almost seems passé, that actually trans is the new gay. And whether you're gay or whether you're straight, it's hard not to notice the rapid rise in understanding and acceptance of the idea that some people are not born in the correct bodies. And it's gotten to the point so much so that kids, and I mean kids, are telling their parents as early as preteen that they know they're not the gender they were born. And I find this to be a fascinating subject, and along my ride, I've interviewed so many transgender people, but I don't ever tire of hearing about what I believe is the bravest thing a person can do, which is to pursue the true authenticity of who they really are. Jenna Talakova joins us today. She made international headlines when she threatened to sue Donald Trump, owner of the Miss Universe pageant, when she was disqualified after officials learned she was born a boy. At 14, she decided to transition. At 19, she had gender reassignment surgery. Talk about a modern world. Jenna now stars in Brave New Girls, a reality show on E! That chronicles life after international fame. I told her this off the air. Let me say it right now. I love you, girl.
Oh, thank you so much. I love you, too.
I don't want to patronize in any way, but you and every trans person in the world are to be commended for the example you set for everybody about being true to who you are. Do you hear that often?
I'm still pretty shy with the label and everything. I think there is more to me and more to other trans women that define them other than, you know, a sex change or this and that. But, the feedback has been great, and I love all the beautiful, inspirational mail I get from, like, fans and the younger transgendered women or, like, people of the LGBT community and how I inspire them to be stronger, and that just makes it all worth it.
Well, and you, it's interesting you said that, and you said this on the first episode of Brave New Girls. You've been through a struggle. And that's what you see it as. And I understand because, you know, I'm a gay guy. I've got trans friends. I've been around the issue. But I think for, and you can elaborate on this, for straight people, there's so many, stupid questions that you must get kind of tired of hearing, having to answer all the time. Do you know what I mean? Is this the case for you?
Especially like when I first went into the public eye and I was getting interviewed by in the States a lot by Barbara Walters, on The View, for so many different networks in LA, and it was all the same question about, you know, my genitalia, about can I feel an orgasm, like things that are just, I understand the public interest in it, but there's just so much more to us and much more bigger issues that we deal with other than that. So,
well, I guess that's the burden of being a trailblazer is you are among the first. And so you're among the first. Yeah. So you have to carry the burden of the stupid questions. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I hope it's not stupid. This is what happened to me the other day. I was walking down the street, ran into a friend of mine, and this friend of mine began raising his best friend's baby when his best friend died, and that baby was HIV positive, a little girl. And so I have known him raising this girl for a long time, and I haven't seen my friend in a while, and we ran into each other in the street. And he said, oh, she's 20 now, and she has a boyfriend. And I was like, oh my God, A, you just made me feel really old. B, she's dating now. I wonder what that must be like to be HIV positive as a young woman, born infected, and having to share that information each and every time. And so my question to you...
Wow, that is so sad.
Right. But my question for you is, it's a bit like the same with her. You have to explain something about yourself every time you're about to get serious with someone. What is that like?
I know. And to be honest, I'm never interested in someone that really knows about me right away, or I haven't really been. And I swear it's one of the most difficult things I always have to, you know, explain to my partner, or because you can't just, it, for me, I'm shy about it, and I just don't feel that it's right to just say it right away, because it doesn't really define me. It's not that I'm trying to hide it. It's just like, that's really, you know, my past is my past, and like, it's what I had to go through to be this girl I am in this moment. I don't, like, I, you know, respect it. I love that I had to go through it, to be honest. It made me just really believe in who I was at a very young age. But it is very difficult having to explain this to a guy, because there's a million things that you can think about that could go wrong. Like, I can never bear children. What is his parents going to think? What is his friends going to think? Will he even look at me the same way? Because once you tell someone, like, oh, she's transgendered, you could say, look at any girl and say that, and then you can start picking away things at the girl. Like, oh, look at her hands, or, well, the way she kind of gestures, or, you know, like, people, like, naturally start doing that. But when I don't tell them, there's, like, they don't notice anything.
Before you're quote-unquote honest, they take you at face value, then you come out, and all of a sudden there's scrutiny. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I can tell on the show you're shy.
I was born with great genes, and, you know, it could be harder for other trans women, and, you know, maybe they could tell right away or anything like that, but for the women that don't look like really trans, and you know, it is kind of difficult, right? Because
I want to ask you about that. You got the Sean Prue Show on Canada Talks, Sirius XM channel 167. I'm talking to Jenna Talakova. The show is called Brave New Girls, and let me ask you this. You talked about being born with great genes, and I can think of two people, one male to female and one female to male, that I know who both told me in interviews and privately, because we're friends, that when they transitioned, they were surprised that they turned out to be as hot as they ended up. And so you talk about great genes, and you are a very hot person. Were you surprised?
I mean, yeah, like, I work on it. Don't get me wrong. I still, you know, I'm open about what I've done to myself, any procedures I've had done. And, but it's just, I never had to, like, completely alter anything about me to look this way. I study nutrition, and I'm really anal about my regime. And now that I just signed to a modeling agency, I'm working out, like, 2 hours a day, and I'm dieting, like, crazy. And I don't know, it's just, when you feel confident, too, that just really makes you kind of shine. It makes you kind of glow.
I got it. It's that Britney Spears song, isn't it? Work, bitch. You want a Maserati?
Yeah. But, so, I mean, I do really, like, I do lots of skin treatments, you know. I recently had double jaw surgery in Korea. I'm not shy about telling people about that because it was corrective jaw surgery, but it also just kind of made it look nicer, too. But other than that, like, you know, I just really take care of my body, and I really supplement well, because being transgender, too, is like, especially when you get the operation and you're going through hormones, like, I didn't know this, and you're all over the place. Like, you're worse than a woman. It's much worse because...
Or a gay man, because we have our moments, too. I'm sure you know. As my husband.
I had to learn how to supplement and take, you know, 5-HTP properly, and just to, you know, combat all these symptoms that goes with a transition.
Let me ask you this. You know, it seems like support. I said this at the top of the interview, and we're running low on time. I'm getting ye old signal here. Support's blossoming for everywhere for trans people. And on my website, thegayguidenetwork.com, one of our contributors writes about trans model Carmen Carrera, who people know from RuPaul's Drag Race. And people think she should be a Victoria's Secret model. And
funny, I'll put this out there.
Put it out.
I love her, met her. But one of the original shows I was supposed to do in L.A., was me training to be a Victoria's Secret model.
Oh.
Like, you got pitched. That was the one show I picked before Brave New Girls. And it's funny that she started this thing, but actually I was told by my agent that I could go for the audition like every other model.
Oh.
But there's no cameras to be allowed and stuff. So I just think it's funny that she would say, oh... Like,
so we have a little bit of a competition.
Reality, I've already been trying.
Well, listen, I think this is what the nice thing is, that we've arrived at this conclusion. There's room enough for as many trans people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I just want to go back to saying this before we close off. I want to say this. If someone can identify at 14 that they want a transgender, I put this out to the listener right now. What in hell is holding any of us back when it comes to fixing something about ourselves that we know isn't real, isn't right, isn't authentic? And I just want to say thank you for the example that you set, Jenna.
Aww. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
You're so sweet. I hope to meet you one day.
I would love to meet you. In the meantime, I'll settle to just watch you on Brave New Girls on East Sundays, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Thank you so much.
Have a beautiful day.
Okay, have a great day.
You're listening to The Sean Prue Show at Channel 167, Canada Talks.
This is The Sean Prue Show on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Sirius XM Canada Talks, Channel 167. It's The Sean Prue Show. I hope your day is going your way. And I wonder if ever, even just once, you have thought it would be great to be famous. And I can tell you that as a little gay boy growing up in rural Ontario many, many years ago, I dreamed of being famous. I dreamed of being famous so badly that my mom was tucking me. This is a very vivid memory. My mom was tucking me into bed as a little boy one night, and she wanted to know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, I want to be an actress. That should have been her first piece of information, that I was not going to be what she wanted me to be. But anyway, that was a long time ago. These days, however, you must agree with me, it seems like when I grow up, I want my own reality show has long replaced that old, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a cop. Henry Bushkin joins us today. And he has tasted fame and witnessed its highs and lows in his role for 18 years as sounding board, drinking buddy, tennis partner, business manager, fix-it, confidant to one of the most influential television icons in Hollywood history. He gives us the definitive account of what it was like to spend 18 years side by side with the man who captivated millions of TV viewers every night for 3 decades in his top 10 New York Times bestselling book, simply titled Johnny Carson. Henry Bushkin, how are you today?
Very good, Sean. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for your time. I really think your book, Johnny Carson, needs to be read by anyone listening who thinks that they want to be famous. I think every parent listening who has a kid who thinks being famous is the end game should really run and get this book, because you firsthand tasted true, authentic fame at its most best and its most ugly. People think they know what fame is, but when you read this book, you get a super strong taste.
Well, you know, that was our life together for 18 years, and many people have criticized me for writing about the man as opposed to the performer. And I think, as the performer, as you said, he's still the best that ever was in late-night television, maybe the most important guy in television in the 20th century mm-hmm. in the U.S., perhaps in Canada as well. And he's still a genius. We still love him as a performer, and we see him now as a complicated, complex human being.
Who paid a high price, and not just him, but you as well. I mean, your marriage, which I sense did mean the world to you, suffered and ultimately ended. Johnny was the star, but you were by his side. And your marriage, as one example of the price of fame, your marriage was collateral damage.
Yes, and you know, if you know the history of many other performers like Carson, marriage was always collateral damage, whether you were the star or whether you were the representative of the star. For me, I was traveling with him all over the world, and most times on business. So obviously there's a lot of time away from home, and as you could imagine, with guys like Sinatra or Dean Martin or Bob Hope or Johnny Carson, they all acted like kids when they were on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it was back then. So, and maybe still is today.
Well, and maybe still is today, but in the end, let me ask you this. So people are listening. They want to be famous. It's it's almost like a disease in our contemporary culture. What do you say to people who really want to pursue the kind of fame that you experienced and obviously that Johnny had?
Well, there's two components to that. One is, does that person really want to succeed as a performer, as an actor, as a singer, as a concert pianist? Do they want to really succeed, or are they just interested in it to become famous? Johnny was interested in it his whole life to work, to perform, to be a performer. That's what he was. So you take Lindsay Lohan, someone like, or the Kardashians, better.
Right.
I mean, they're celebrities just for the sake of being celebrities. So I think that's the difference. If a kid wants to become an actor, he's got to be serious about it, as opposed to just becoming an actor because he'll become famous.
I think
that's the distinction.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I was in a Variety store on the weekend, and it was probably like 7 p.m. I was on my way to a dinner party, and I stopped off for a couple things. And I just heard these kids talking to me as I was paying for my purchase. Not talking to me, but talking behind me. And one of them I heard say, "Ah, I have always wanted my own reality show." And that made my ears perk up. And I turned to my right and I looked at him and I thought, "You're five. You've always wanted your own reality show." Let me ask you this.
Times have changed. You know, back when Johnny was on the air, there were no reality shows, essentially. There were magazine shows, stuff like that, but no reality shows as we know it today. It's just a different medium that didn't exist. Johnny, obviously, in terms of reality, would have no interest in reality because his interest was in performing, was being the performer. The reality in his life was off the air, and that's what was so complicated and complex about the man.
Let me ask you, on the point of fame and on Johnny Carson, there's one thing in your book that shocked me. It was when he got employees such as yourself to make condolence calls for him. If someone close to him had a loss in their family, for example, someone died, you would make the condolence call. And when I read that, I thought, I didn't think, how dare he? But I did think to myself, what kind of person, what is the trait that Johnny Carson had that he thought it was normal or right to not make a simple phone call himself? Was that the kind of fame he had achieved?
Well, you know, you're sort of blending into narcissism now. Because forget about family background or anything like that, or your upbringing. But if you're a superstar and your every whim is catered to, if you go into a restaurant, if I went into a restaurant and we had to wait 15 minutes, we'd wait. If he went into the restaurant and waited, he wouldn't wait the 15 minutes. And that's just part and parcel of what comes with the territory when you become a superstar. So to answer your question about making a phone call, yeah, I mean, going to funerals for him was a big deal. He never went.
Mm.
I mean, he went to one or two. David Jansen, who's a guy you probably don't remember, he went to that funeral. And he may have gone to Richard Pryor's funeral. I mean, that's all I can remember.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Hey, you're listening to Canada Talks, Channel 167. It's the Sean Prue Show, and my guest is Henry Bushkin, the best-selling author of one of the best books I've read in ages. I was telling him this off the air. Johnny Carson is the name of the book, New York Times bestseller. Henry, I was reading the book, and something became very clear to me about the relationship you and Johnny had that I was waiting for you to put into words the whole time I read it. And finally, in the end, you said what was so obvious to me. You use the words, "after we broke up." Once you'd finally parted ways, you were no longer his lawyer after 18 years. And then you end the book telling us, "I loved him." And I thought that for a straight man, no offense, that was very modern and open-hearted of you. It went to show, to me anyway, I'm 45 years old, maybe it's my age or maybe it's just the way the world is evolving, But I've come to understand that it doesn't matter whether you're a lover or a husband or a wife. We're all capable of having these deep and meaningful relationships with people. And from what I got, you had a full-on relationship with Johnny Carson.
Yeah, some of us use the term bromance.
Bromance.
So that's sort of a bromance is sort of a modern term, right? It didn't exist 20 years ago. So we sort of had that bromance, and obviously there were moments when, you know, when you represent a guy and you're so close with him, you take on the defense of that person because that's your job. You know, that was my job. People think that, you know, a lawyer is supposed to be in the office from 9 to 5, and that's it. Well, this was 24/7, and obviously the guy did so many brilliant things. He was so brilliant in many, many areas. I mean, he was Carl Sagan was a very good friend of him, the noted scientist. Carson was an astronomer. He loved astronomy. Now, how many people are astronomers of this world? I mean, think about it.
Mm.
He was a well-rounded, he liked to think of himself as a Renaissance guy, and yeah, I did love him. You know, it did last. You know, now 30 years later, I could say it. But when the end came, did I love him? Not a bit. Was I bitter? You bet.
Like many relationships, that end. Right? You know, the love ends, the love dies, you were bitter. When you look back now, do you still love him?
Well, I do in this sense. You know, he's gone. He can't speak for himself. And I feel this book is part of a renaissance for him. He's now back in popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's now a subject of conversation with a hip guy like yourself who's got a very topical hot show in Canada. And you're talking about Johnny Carson. You're talking about it certainly because of the book, but the book talks about him, and that's what people are interested in.
Well,
I think it's terrific that he's recognized as being such a gigantic talent, and he's coming back into the vernacular of 30-year-olds and even 20-year-olds are talking about him.
Well, because I think we're getting to the point from all of this sort of reality show, you know, sort of drowning in that kind of culture where we're looking at talent and really recognizing true talent. And as you said, and I completely agree at the top of this interview, he remains the king. I mean, I know even Jimmy Fallon is going to the Tonight Show, and kudos to him. He's an awesome, awesome, awesome host. But there still hasn't been a Johnny Carson. And I have one quick question for you, and then we've got to say goodbye. I think one of the most interesting stories in the book is the Johnny Carson side, through you, of course, of one of the biggest scandals in Hollywood history, and that's when Joan Rivers got her own nighttime show on Fox. She went head-to-head against the man who had helped her star rise in the first place. And Joan has talked about her side of the story. And I just want to just end with a little bit from you about how Carson saw that maneuver as you witnessed it.
He saw it as a betrayal only in the sense that she didn't tell him in advance. He had no issue with her taking her own show. He had no issue with her being in competition with him because he didn't think she really was competition. He was proved right. All he was concerned about and why he gets so irritated was that she never let him know, or me, through her husband, that she was going to do another show. And we found out about it. I found out about 5 in the morning that somebody called me saying she's from New York, saying she signed with Fox. So that was it. But I must tell you, I did a show with her last month in New York, a PBS show. No, it was public radio in New York. And she was terrific. You know, they were good pals. They were good friends. She got her career start on his show, and it's a shame that that's all they remember. You know, it was the breakup. I like to think of the times when they were really good friends and he really trusted her.
Well, you illustrate those kinds of times because you talk a bit about Joan earlier in the book. You got to buy Johnny Carson to read what I'm talking about. You share so much about a man that I think people of my generation, younger generations, and certainly like someone like my mother, one of my fondest memories is staying up late over summer vacation because I could, and watching The Tonight Show with my mom. That's an enduring memory of mine. And so thank you for opening up some information about someone that has long been kind of an enigma, as I said. Henry Bushkin's book is Johnny Carson. Follow him at Henry Bushkin on Twitter, and henrybushkin.com is his website. I want to say thank you for joining us here on SiriusXM Canada Talks on the Sean Prue Show, Henry.
Thank you, Sean. I enjoyed it very much.
Have a grand day.
You too. Bye.
We'll be right back with more of the Sean Prue Show on Canada Talks, Channel 167, SiriusXM. Don't go away. You're listening to The Sean Prue Show, Channel 167, Canada Talks, and I can't tell you how pleased I am to welcome this Southern Belle to the show, because I get to ask the question I've been wanting to ask women like her for many years now. Robin Reichman was once a Dallas area prison worker who traded in her cowboy boots for a chic lifestyle in Vancouver that includes two nannies, a Point Grey home, and a Prada saddle for her thoroughbred horse. She stole the show last season on The Real Housewives of Vancouver and surprised me at home last week with a phone call, and I liked her from the get-go. How are you, Robin?
Hi, Sean. How are you?
I'm good, girl. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. Just surviving the Vancouver sleet and snow right now.
Let's not talk about the weather. I want to talk about what keeps me sane during these horrible times with the weather. The Real Housewives franchise, I have to acknowledge, is my favorite guilty pleasure. I watch them all. But this is the question I have to start with you. I've been wanting to ask a Real Housewife this question since the franchise began many years ago. Why? Why would you put yourself on a show like this? And I say that with the utmost respect. I get that it's a great way to boost a brand, elevate a career, but you have this intrinsic risk of putting yourself on display and at the mercy of producers and editors. And tell me why.
Well, it is true. You do put yourself out there a little bit, exposing yourself in so many ways. And I was going through a divorce, you know, that people do go through. And I was married 20 years, and it was a blindsided kind of thing. And I wanted to get my mind off of my true reality of what was going on in my personal life. And so I thought, well, what better way to escape, you know, all my problems than to bury myself into a project kind of thing. So I looked at it as kind of a fun project of representing beautiful Vancouver. I mean, it's beautiful here, and I thought, ooh, I'd be a part of that. It was number one the first season, and maybe that's what I need to do. So I did it.
Well, I know I've read about your divorce, and people who know you, it was a very good divorce in some ways. Financially, it was very good for you.
Yeah.
But I do understand what you mean when you said that your life was upside down. It's my understanding that it was a very devastating time because it coincided with the birth of twins, one of whom did not survive.
That's correct.
If cameras are rolling, though, at such a devastating time, though they were not when this happened, you set yourself up for a horrible experience. And, you know, I read all the tabbies, as I call them, and Ramona Singer from Real Housewives of New York, her whole marriage is on display. And so it fascinates me. You're a risk taker, clearly. You are a risk taker.
I am. I've always been a risk taker. It's just my personality. I'm a little bit of a daredevil, a little bit of a rebel kind of thing. And you know what? I could take these women. They're no threat to me, right? I didn't fear for them in any way. I just wanted to spice up the show a little bit and just kind of stay true to myself and just go with the flow, and that's exactly what I did. Had I known it was going to be the nightmare that it was.
Well, had you known... Would you have done it?
Pardon me?
Would you have still done it?
Being the way it went down, based on just that, probably no, because I don't have any other reason, you know, like I don't have anything I want to endorse. I wasn't trying to rekindle a music career or anything like that.
I just felt those claws, girl. I just felt some claws come out all the way here in the Toronto studio. I felt that. Go on.
Well, it's, you know, I'm not a real big socialite, and those women are, you know, they like to go out all the time, party, not all of them, but most, and it's just their everyday lifestyle, and mine is just more kind of like keep to myself, and I got my own horse riding, and this, that, and the other, and I have two girls that a lot of people, you know, didn't even know, because I did not have my kids on the show, and I just kind of did my own thing, created my own drama, and tried to avoid the rest, and unfortunately, I missed two of the episodes, which, you know, I wish to God I'd have been there, especially the tea party. when Jody flipped out on Mary and no one really stood up for her. And at that time, I probably would have pulled a Teresa on the New Jersey.
Flip the table
and say, what the? You know, because I can't sit back and just let someone scream at the top of their lungs at someone that just does not deserve it. I can't sit back and let that happen. And everybody else did. And so would have, could have, should have, whatever, didn't. I wasn't there. But I wished I would have been, but then I think that was God's way of protecting me, of saving my true self, because then I would have ruined everything by showing how I really can be toward the end. So I guess it was a blessing at the same time that I missed that, and the whole entire show was a complete lesson. So I don't have any regrets, so I just learned from my stuff, right?
Well, let me put something to you. You know, when I first started watching Real Housewives of Vancouver, not the season you were on, the first season, it didn't include you in the cast. It was interesting to compare Canadian housewives to American housewives. And I would say to my husband, Patrick, that it almost felt true, that stereotype about Canadians. There just wasn't that aggressive, domineering, hot glue gun mess that, you know, we see in Atlanta or Orange County. And so now, as an American woman living in Canada who just said she wished she was at that tea party because she would have defended and flipped the table, do you find that there is a difference, a real solid, true difference between the persona of Canadians and personas of Americans in this kind of way?
God, yes. And, you know, and it's and being a Southerner from the South, it's even worse. And, you know, because we you know, can act very, let's say, not very ladylike. And I find that Canadians in general are just way, way, way more reserved and a little bit, they hold back a little bit. They're not as aggressive. And that's a good thing. I like that. But at the same time, it can just get a little boring. You know, and so when you spice it up a little bit, that's really what the viewers want. So we really know when we're cast, you know, that we're not supposed to sit there and knit socks and talk about our children's football game.
Not if you want to be back next season.
And so we know that, you know, at least bring a little something of drama, if you would. But it is difficult because you have, you have to know when to draw the line. Otherwise, you know, you truly are burning bridges and you truly are making enemies and you truly are hurting feelings. And that's the other part of that comes with this show. And I don't like doing that naturally, but when I have good reason and someone truly is making me mad, someone truly is needs it, you know, needs a smack in the face, then I'll be the first to do it.
You're listening to Canada Talks, Channel 167. It's the Sean Prue Show, and my guest is the spicy Robin Reichman from The Real Housewives of Vancouver. I read somewhere, Robin, you were raised with what people call strong Christian values, but sometimes that's a dichotomy within yourself because baby girl likes to party. Is this true?
Absolutely. You know, I feel like a hypocrite sometimes, but you know what? I have decided in my 40s that I don't want to be labeled as spiritual, Christian, this, that, and the other. Just I follow Christ, and that's it. I'm a hypocrite. Yes, I am. Who isn't?
I like the honesty that you're bringing into this, because I'm going to just say this, and this is a whole new conversation for another interview, but I believe that you can be spiritual, you can be religious, and you can still have fun. And that if you're talking about God or the universe or whatever you believe in, if it's really the loving God or universe that you believe in, they love watching you have a really good time. I believe that.
I do too. People say, like preachers, for instance, and they have tons of money and they're just frauds and they're fakes and this, that, and the other, and they live the luscious life, you know, the successful ones. Who am I to judge? You know, they're still spreading the word and trying to make a difference in people's lives and teaching them about God, Jesus, whatever religion they're teaching. And just because they're successful at it, I don't think God would want, you know, the people who's committed their life to driving Volkswagens and wagon trains to get from A to Z. Why can't they fly first class and this, that, and the other? I mean, who God puts limits on how successful one should be, if for what reasons, right?
This is probably, you mentioned you're in your 40s. I am too. This is the one thing that I know for sure that I've learned in 40 years of living.
You don't look like you're in your 40s, Sean.
You don't look like you're in your 40s, girl.
I've seen pictures of you.
This is what I know. I know that it is impossible to please anyone, because everybody, whether they want your religion or your political vote or whatever, everybody wants something different from you. And all you can do is do the things that feel good to you. And whether that is being an evangelical preacher or whether that is, you know, going out and partying, all you can do is be honest to yourself, and the rest has to follow. And that's the path to good living. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. 100%, and by being you, by being yourself, it's what you see is what you get. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that's what happened with the housewife. So you either love me or hate me. I can't help that.
Well, listen, we're running low on time. I want to have you back. I want to know what it was like to work in the Texas prison system. I want to know real quick. You're starting a line of pet food. I understand.
Yes, I am. Vitamin water for dogs and cats. Pawtrician.
Pawtrician. Is there a website?
It is a website, but we can't open it until March the 14th when we do our launching in Fort Lauderdale. And that's the first. So if you have pets and you love your cat and you love your dog and you just want to make sure that you're doing everything possible to make their life a healthier life so you can live longer. And like a human being, what you eat and what you drink is what you are. And it's the same thing really with dogs and cats.
I agree.
So if they're not getting what they need in the dog food, you can pop it in the water, and it's like a vitamin one a day kind of thing, but it comes in the water instead. And so it's vitamin water for dogs and cats.
You're a delight. You're a delight. I want to have you back. I want to have you back to dish more. Robin Reichman is Robin Reichman TX on Twitter. What's the best and worst thing in one word about having your life on display? What's the best thing?
A voice.
And the worst?
Being judged.
Being judged. Robin Reichman, I wish you peace and love.
It's a pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167, The Sean Preece Show. We'll be right back. It's the Sean Preece Show, brand new on Channel 167, Canada Talk, SiriusXM. And I have to tell you, here in my hometown of Toronto, in my community of gay brothers and sisters, there is a buzz going on that's gaining intensity as weeks go by. And several years back, in a bidding war against Stockholm, Sweden, Toronto won the right to be host city this summer, June 2014, for World Pride. It's previously only ever taken place on European soil. And so we have been preparing like a virgin of the prison ball for the world to come and visit us this June. It's a chance not just for Toronto, but for all of Canada, famous for our global leadership regarding human rights, to show the rest of the world what it's made of. And this man joining me right now, Kevin Beaulieu, he's the Pride Toronto Executive Director, has the task of pulling this circus off. He's got a lot on his plate, but has time to help create wonderful initiatives to benefit the likes of our gay brothers and sisters in Sochi. At the same time, Kevin, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
The last time I saw you... The last time I saw you, and I will not name names, one of us was a little tipsy celebrating Montreal Pride. I don't know. Have you recovered?
We've had a while. We're good.
I've had a while. Okay. Hey, let's discuss your social media initiative, hashtag Love Sochi. Tell us what you're doing and how everyone listening to Canada Talks can join in.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you about that. Love Sochi really is a campaign aimed at supporting the local Russian community on the ground in Russia. There's a great deal of attention right now in the international community to the Olympics and to Sochi because of the passage of recent laws forbidding discussion of homosexuality in Russia and forcing people essentially back into the closet. So while there's a big conversation happening, it's also important to remember the people who live there and will live there during the Olympics and long after. I've had a chance to talk to some of them, and they're aware of the support in the international community, and it does help to encourage them and give them strength. And so this campaign really is about showing support. While there's a theoretical dialogue happening about human rights, it also happens on the ground for these people. So what we're asking people to do is tweet or use social media with the hashtag LoveSochi and make a heart with their hands. It's simply a show of support for the people on the ground there to show them that there's strength in the community around the world behind them.
Well, and my team and I were out drinking, oddly enough, not long ago. And so we did this, and we're about to post it up. I just want to offer one little photo tip if I can. And people, when you do this, hold your heart straight. My husband and I did nice, perfect hearts, and everyone else on the team, they just kind of looked like their hands went through some sort of masher. So you sort of want to make sure that the hearts are done properly. Now, I've got a couple minutes left with you, Kevin. So tell us, and this show's heard across Canada and the U.S., and I feel like drowning in World Pride stuff right now, but not everyone obviously feels that way. Tell us about World Pride. If we're hearing about this for the first time, what is it?
Sure. As you mentioned, enthusiasm has been growing across Canada and North America and really around the world, particularly as World Pride is this year. What's happening is that we're expanding the festival and inviting everyone from around the world to join us for a galvanizing moment in our global communities and a celebration of who we are. That's the basis of the Pride movement, celebrating who we are as individuals and communities, and of course advancing human rights for LGBT people that way. So in addition to an expanded and enhanced parade with a parade of nations and an opening ceremony at City Hall with fireworks and headline entertainers who will be announcing soon, and a closing ceremony, we also have a human rights conference, which will host about 450 activists and people from around the world to come and tell their stories and celebrate with us and help to move Pride forward. We've also got partnerships with all the major galleries and institutions and theaters and museums around the city to ensure that there's lots of programming for people who are coming to take part in World Pride. To really have, there's more than anyone could possibly do over the course of the week. So Pride is going to be not just the parade and the very large arts and cultural festival for which we're known, but there's going to be a lot more out there as well this year. And we're looking forward to several waves of announcements between now and when that happens on June 20th through the 29th.
So watch worldpridetoronto.com for information on that. My own site, thegayguidenetwork.com, starting to post your announcements as well to plan your trip, book hotels, and work the camera for Love Sochi people. Kevin, I know I said this when I was back in Montreal, slurring my words, but let me say it again. Thank you to you and your team for the very good work that you do.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
You've got the Sean Prue Show on Canada Talks, Channel 167. And before we go, having just talked with Kevin about Pride Toronto's Love Sochi social media campaign, I want to put it out there. I love Sochi. It's not something you're likely to hear from a gay man or anyone who abhors the treatment of LGBT people per Putin's Russia. And of course, like millions of humans, I do abhor the vile treatment of LGBT people per Putin's Russia. But at the same time, it's important to look at things from a broader perspective. And for me, as I do that, I can't help but gain an understanding about how the unspeakable perspective and treatment of people in Russia who are gay and around the world for being gay ultimately ends up being for the greater good that future generations will benefit mightily from. Atrocities are committed against queer people all the time. India was just in the news, and people around the world took to the streets to protest and show their love and support. But news and news consumers are fickle. Soon other stories gave way that caught the attention of the world. But Sochi, well, Sochi is different because the Winter Games are in Sochi. The world is watching. The world is listening. The media has been reporting for months ahead of the games, and now as the games continue with greater and greater intensity. And it's with that same intensity that the spotlight on the gay cause is being shone. In my whole 45 years of living, of being gay, of my time in media, of being an activist, I've never seen so much attention being paid to the cause of gay equality. Never, ever. It's a cause that is obviously so close to my heart, probably yours, that ultimately I have to repeat myself because it is so close. I love Sochi. Because now more than ever before, the world is talking, the world is thinking, and the world ultimately will change for the better more quickly than it would have if Sochi didn't exist, if Putin never happened. So thank you, Sochi. Thank you, Putin. You make gay people better gays. As you insist, we rise up to create better for our brothers and sisters. You make us all in humanity better. As you insist, we demand more for each other as humans. You take us all further, faster than we ever imagined was possible in this lifetime. I'm Sean Prue. You're listening to SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167. Follow me at Sean Prue and at Sean Prue Show on Twitter. And of course, SXM Canada Talks for all the latest and greatest from our lineup. I look forward to being with you again. Until then, peace and love.